Hello, everybody. It's Matt McConkey. I am solo at the moment because sweet, sweet Dave is a very busy working man, and I am not. But don't worry, he is in the interview, and we're going to get right to it. We had such a great conversation with Connor Franta. He is a YouTube phenomenon and an entrepreneur. Very smart, very accomplished, very cool, very young, under 30, which is upsetting. And you know that I don't always love talking to the YouTubers, but I love Connor. You're going to love him too. We had a really great conversation. He's got a new memoir out now. It's called House Fires. This is his third memoir. He's already written three memoirs. You can get it wherever you get your books. You're definitely going to want to read it after hearing him today. Without further ado, here is Connor Franta.
Connor Franta in a room full of plantas.
There you go.
Where are you?
I'm at home here in West Hollywood.
Ooh, okay. All right. Very good. How is life over there? Is the street life teeming with activity?
Weirdly quiet, weirdly calm. Not a lot going on over here, to be honest, which is better than the alternative of what was happening like a year ago. But it's very quiet.
I went out there. I live on the east side, but I did go to West Hollywood like two or three weekends ago, and it was packed.
Really? I feel like maybe, when did you go? Did you go like on a weekend? Like where they?
I went on a weekend, like a weekend night, like a fucking, bridge and tunnel person, which essentially I am now. Do you ever venture out there? Do you hit the bars? And
not during COVID. I'll have a rare vulnerable moment where someone will convince me to go to a barish club situation. I've done it a couple times in the last 2 years during the pandemic, but not frequently. I don't know how some people are doing it every weekend. It's still scary for me.
Yes. Yeah.
A little bit wild. So what have you been doing during lockdown?
During lockdown, I feel like isn't it strange that it just feels like normal now? I had the sickest thought the other day where I was like, remember the first month of the pandemic where no one was really dying and we were all just like inside and just kind of like panicked but relaxed at the same time? Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm low-key nostalgic for it.
Wow. What a time.
Yeah, but no.
What a time.
Yeah.
What have you been watching, listening to, reading, consuming?
I mean, lately, I feel like we've really dove into the spooky season of it all. So I've been watching a lot of horror, thrillers, dramas. I watched Midnight Mass on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen.
No, I have not. How is
that? Oh, you haven't seen. It's from the same director, producer that did Haunting of Hill House and Haunting of Bly Manor, and it's fantastic. It deals with the spookiest thing of them all, religion. So I absolutely adored it. Thought it was fantastic.
Okay. What is your religious background?
I grew up in a Catholic family. I went to a Catholic school until eighth grade, went to a public high school, and then a Catholic university as well, or private university. So
which one?
St. John's University in Minnesota, not in New York.
Okay. All right. And what is your relationship with Catholicism now?
Oh, there isn't one. We're divorced. Right. Yeah. Sure. No, it was funny. I really love religion in that I think it's fascinating. I think it's in a different life, I would have actually studied global religions or more just like theology in general. I think it's so interesting. But that's where my departure from it occurred, is when I allowed myself to look past the storytelling fantastical element of it and more look at like the nitty gritty details, really analyzing the text of the Bible. And I was like, oh, this is like a lot of things A, don't add up here, but B, if they do, I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
That's a little bonkers. And do you think something has taken its place in your adult life?
I think for a while I was like, I'm going to be full-blown young rebellion atheist and think nothing matters. And then after a while, I like the idea of being more agnostic, because who am I to say that God doesn't exist? And who am I to say that God does exist? It's no one knows either of those things definitively. So I like the element of being like, you know what, I'm open to being wrong here, but I'm not going to let sort of the organization of religion or dictate how I live my life or how I treat other people, essentially. So has anything replaced it? No, I think I focus more on what I think being a good person is versus what someone tells me being a good person is.
There's, in Catholicism, there's the rules and there's the doctrine and there's the ritual and all that kind of thing. And it's easy to walk away from that. It's semi-easy to walk away from that. What is harder, I have found, is to identify the cultural Catholic stuff, like the propensity for like shame and guilt and the idea that like suffering unto itself is like a gift or a noble thing or whatever. And that is the stuff that as I move forward in my life, I am trying to learn to identify and separate myself from. Is that, how are you on that journey?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, especially if it was, I don't think we missed a single church service growing up. We, like, even when we were out of town, out of the state, you know, out of the city, whatever it was, we would find a Catholic church to go to. And by no means were we like perfect Catholics. I like to say that we were relaxed Catholics in yeah. that we went to church, but we weren't like praying before everything we ate, or we weren't reading the Bible at home for fun, but we were regulars to attend Mass. But yeah, I mean, I think something as habitual as that, or something that's totally ingrained into your routine as a child, is hard to shake. And there, I mean, there are certain aspects of it that I don't want to shake. There are certain aspects of it that I do understand, and that I really understand why people do gravitate towards it. But yeah, I think I just focus less on making it a worry or a thought or a care in my mind.
Yeah.
it's a waste of my time, not a waste of everyone's time,
sure,
I guess.
Sure. You know, I came across, honestly, some great priests and monks in my Catholic schooling, which was all of it. And like some very smart, very wise people. And, you know, and I remain close with them, but the religion itself, it's tough.
Yeah, my school is, my university was unique because it had a sister school. So we had intertwined classes and two campuses and everything, but they were technically two separate schools. Yeah. But we also were unique because we had a monastery on campus, and we had practicing monks.
What order? One of which, do you remember?
If you said it, okay. It would ring a
Franciscan,
bell.
Franciscan, Benedictine.
My dad is going to roast me for this because he still sends me like the newsletters or like the monk's take, and how can I not remember it?
That's
either
okay.
way.
Okay.
But we still communicate with a lot of them. A lot of the monks, you know, were professors, and they still like support everything I do. There are a few of them that love to like catch up, and they want to know what I'm up to. They love that like I'm an out gay person. They love that I've, you know, left school early to pursue something else. One of the kids I went to school with, who was going to be my roommate the year before I dropped out, he's now a monk. So like,
wow,
it's yeah, I know, isn't it crazy? It's pretty like. Yeah, it's all of it still intertwined. So I still have a deep love and appreciation for it. When it doesn't, when it's, I guess, practiced correctly or with care, I would say.
I wonder if there's something. My high school was monks. It was Benedictine monks, and no one, you know, for the 5 years ahead of me or 5 years behind me, joined the order. But somehow in the last like 10, 15 years. Not a ton, but maybe one or two every couple classes stays and becomes a monk. And I just wonder whether that's like a reaction to just the increasing uncertainty of life and just like literally being like, no, I'm just going to stay here and I'm going to, you know, wear a robe for the rest of my life or what. I don't know. But the idea of becoming a monk is wild to me. Yeah, there's
something
simple,
very attractive.
Simple in a strange way about it. It's not for me, but God bless. So how often do you talk to your monk former roommate?
So he was going to be my roommate. He was part of the cross country team I was on, but no, actually frequently. So, my parents do a road race every year and he came down to run it this last, like a month ago. So I saw him a month ago. And then when I was home in Minnesota in the summer, we drove through and just stopped at the campus for the first time in like years. And he was there, of course.
Yeah.
So we saw him then, and yeah, but I get the appeal of it when we're also deeply intertwined with our technological devices, and we feel like there's impending doom approaching every 2 seconds. I'm like, the idea of disconnecting and just being, I guess, kind of knowing this, you finally have control on a certain certainty over your future and your life. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah,
it does. But is he disconnected to the point of, I mean, does he know who you are? Does he know about your career?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He still has social media, but I feel like he's just posting like, we trimmed the trees today, and then like a month later, it's very low touch. I would be actually really interested to see more so like what does he have a Netflix account? What's he watching?
Yeah.
Or if that's not, or if he just reads. I could see both happening.
Yeah. Wow.
So take us back to the late 90s or 2000s or whatever in Wisconsin, little Connor. Paint a picture for us of who he was.
Little Connor was rambunctious and a little shit. I was the problem child of the family. I was the one that my mom used to always have her head pointed at the ground with her eyes closed saying, he's going to do something special. He's going to do something special. I just praying probably because I was always, I don't know. I was always stirring the pot in the family. I was always messing with the sibling. I was always putting on little shows for everyone. I remember I remember when the Harry Potter movies would come out and I would like act out to the trailer, the movie. Like I would stand in front of the trailer on like the TV and I would like act it out. I was so like excited about it and it made me feel so alive. So I would do things like that. My family would laugh and think it was hilarious. But at the same time, again, I was causing them so much so much stress and chaos. And then somewhere around puberty, it was kind of like the opposite of what I feel like happens to a lot of people. That's when I calmed down. I didn't get more annoying. I got less annoying and my family started to like me a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you weren't a problem child. I mean, in terms of getting in trouble in school.
No.
Was it that level? No.
Just exuberant.
I say problem child in the Midwestern Minnesotan sense, Catholic kid sense, where it was just like, I was just annoying and loud and charismatic.
You stood out.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, yeah, that can be trouble. That can be a problem.
A little too much personality for Wisconsin.
Yeah, he's got a little too much personality. Sounds a little fruity to me, but
but you were filled with joy. That's a thing to be. That's a good thing to
angst.
Be. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of angst in there. But so that was me. And then I calmed down going into high school, leaving my small K-8 middle elementary school, which had around 80 kids in total. Ooh. In the K-8. And go to a high school that had 400 kids in total. Big jump, still very small.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, okay, so like you're talking in eighth grade, I'm not gonna do the math, but there's fewer than 10 kids?
We had fewer than 10 kids. I think we graduated with 6.
Wowee. Okay, so were you, how close were you with them?
One of them is still a really good friend of mine. And then two of them, no idea where they are in the world. And then two of the other ones, I know where they are, but haven't talked to them in years.
Okay.
But one of them still talk to all the time.
All right. Familiarity sometimes breeds contempt. Then occasionally friendships develop.
I think it's just it's the nature of life, but it's also the nature of like what I've done. I mean, I'm one of the only people that left even in my high school graduating class, let alone my middle elementary school that left like the state of Minnesota.
Yeah.
So distance kind of didn't give us a chance.
Right.
And so then after puberty, we're in the new high school, you have leveled out a bit in terms of your temperament and who is Connor then?
Connor then was very quiet and relied on his friends to be his personality, I suppose, to a certain extent, which is funny because I was also somehow very well liked amongst everyone in the school. And the only reason I know that is because I was voted like homecoming king But at the same time, I was not a personality. I was not someone standing up and giving confident speeches like everyone in this classroom likes me. No, I was terrified. I had very good grades, but I would not consider myself like the smart kid. I was really good at sports, but I was never the best at sports. So it was always this thing of like, I had an identity, but I also didn't at the same time know what it was. I relied very much on the people around me to like tell me what to like and who to be for high school specifically.
Yeah, I think that's common.
And how does but how does that guy become homecoming king, do you think? Is it just good old-fashioned likability?
I think there was like a perfect storm of I was the new kid, but I was the new kid, quote-unquote, even though I lived in the town. I was the new kid that people got to know. But then also I was like a really nice, calm kid at that point. So it was easy for me to relate to anybody because I was good at sports. I did have like a 4.0. And then also I loved nerdy things. Like, you know, I was deeply involved on the internet and in chat forums and all of that. So I could relate to, like, I remember so many moments, where I would be partnered up with, you know, one of the less quote unquote cool kids or the one of like the quote unquote weirdos. And I was like, we have a lot in common. Like, it seems like you know that YouTuber? I know that YouTuber. You like that anime? I like that anime. So that's why I was like, I don't know why. I think it was more popular in the sense that everyone liked me, but not popular in the sense that I was like the most liked.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It was just hard for people to not like you, it sounds like.
I guess.
Which makes sense. So you were already a deeply online kid, but tell us about the birth of your career. Like, how deliberate of an approach, how much ambition was attached to it when you first started?
I think more than I give myself credit for. You know how like when someone asks you something that's been a facet of your life for a really long time, you like regurgitate an answer. You never really think about it. You just constantly say it and eventually it becomes the truth. I think for the longest time, I've always told people that there was no intention for it to be anything, but I don't think that's authentic. I think I was so well versed in the internet and in internet culture, watching YouTubers, watching social media people being like, oh, the ones that are doing really well, they have a Twitter, a Facebook, a MySpace, and a YouTube. Oh, they seem to promote their videos like this. Oh, these seem to do thumbnails like this. Like, in a way, subconsciously or consciously studying how to be popular, how the popular people did it, and in a way mimicking what they did. So there was no intention, or I guess there was no, I never thought I would be as big as I am, but there was definitely intention behind each post that I put out. And there was, I guess, strategy in a way as well. But yeah, no, I started making videos when I was 17. So my junior year of high school, no one was even really watching YouTube then, let alone putting stuff on YouTube. So it was a big like secret. I would do my homework. I mean, I would finish school, I would go to cross country practice or swim team practice, come home, do my homework, and like around 9, 10 p.m. everyone else would be going to bed. I would lock the door and I would start making YouTube videos and like editing them, and then, you know, 1 a.m. would roll around and then I would go to bed, wake up at 5 a.m. for swim practice, all the stuff. It was just like so addicting to be a part of that cycle.
The energy of youth. What was your first video?
My first video was a video about my first video.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just like,
tell us everything.
I think the opening line is just like, hello world, this is my YouTube channel. I don't know what I'm going to do, but it's going to be a lot of fun, or I hope it's going to be a lot of fun. It was just like the quickest little introduction.
Yeah.
And what was the first one that really exploded?
I never really know the answer to this question. I never had like, until my coming out video, like an ultra viral video, but I had a really steady increase in views. So it was like the first year, all the videos were getting maybe 100 views or something, not a lot. Second year, it was like maybe 1,000. Third year, it was like, oh, now they're all getting like 20,000. And then fourth year, it was like, oh, now they're all getting 1,000,000. It was just like this crazy, crazy incline. But there was never one video that all of a sudden everything else from then on went crazy viral.
Well, let's talk about your coming out video,
because it was 2014, I believe, and you come. It's a very emotional, you know, coming out video with I think over 12 million views or something in that range. So where take us back to the headspace you were in when it, sort of the build up to making that.
Yeah, I mean, coming out videos were becoming a thing at that time. They weren't already necessarily a thing. So looking back on it, it's like a totally different environment to be a part of. So it's sometimes, you know, people, almost, it's not that they make fun of it nowadays, but they think like, why would you make a coming out video? It seems so showboaty. But at the time, there weren't many videos representing the queer community. So it seemed like a very important thing to do. And a very scary thing to do because no one else had, I guess, blazed that trail in a way. But so I came out to the first person in my life at the beginning of 2014, and I came out to everyone in the world at the end of 2014. So that's kind of how quick my process happened. Yeah. It was very, very fast, very wild, uncontrollable ride that I put myself on. And I think it's one of the only times in my life I didn't overthink something and I just let it happen. Cause nowadays I'm always making sure that everything is like the right decision. I'm a little bit of a control freak, a little bit of a, you know, type A Virgo who just like wants everything to be organized and perfect. But at the time after I had released that control and I told a friend on his couch in January, I believe of 2014, it was like the feeling of relief. It was almost like releasing 20 years of stress and anxiety. I thought, oh my God, I just need to do this. I told another person a few days later. I told a whole group of people a couple weeks later, told my family a couple weeks after that. And it was just like, oh, this is great. Like, even if there's a bad reaction, I finally feel at ease.
And were there bad reactions?
No, I'm very, very fortunate. I think I'm a product of what can happen if you are surrounded by the right people or if people react positively to you, because I was never stifled by a negative reaction or criticism necessarily in my personal life or in my public life. Even though I had a lot of religious friends and family, no one ever to my face told me what I was doing was wrong or like sinful or blasphemous or any of those, you know, words. My family was really great. I think the only thing in hindsight is that everyone was accepting, but it was definitely uncomfortable for some people and they more didn't know what to say besides like, love you. And that's it, which was all I needed at the time, but there was no more exploration of what that meant. But the best reaction I had was, and she probably doesn't even realize it was the best reaction, but it was my mom, because she said, her words were after I told her finally, she said, it's okay. Are you seeing anybody? Like, she immediately went into the curiosity of like, what is this life like of yours that I didn't know was your life? And that meant more to me than anything in the world, that it wasn't any sort of questions about it. It was more questions like to me about me.
Yeah. Was there, you know, this woman who spent your youth saying he's going to do something special? Was she taken by surprise, or did things kind of? Was she like, yeah?
No one knew.
Really?
No, okay. It could be that Midwestern ignorance because I didn't know many queer people growing up. I didn't know many people that didn't look and talk and act exactly like me. To a certain extent, but no, my family had no idea. My friends had no idea. Even my friend group in LA, most didn't have any idea. And I only, again, now am able to look back at videos of me at that time in the closet and say, yeah, you could definitely tell I was putting on a bit of a show, or like my voice was a little bit different. My mannerisms were a little bit different. I was very constricted in a way, but no one had a clue. Wow. Had them all fooled.
Okay.
20 years.
Let's talk about those early LA years. How old were you when you moved here?
I moved here. So I went to two years of university and then came here for a summer and never left. Mm. So I was probably, what does that make me, 19, 20?
Wow. That's young. That's young for LA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's old enough, but still very young.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. How did you keep from getting, you know, sucked into the darker side of LA that so many young people do find themselves getting kind of drawn into?
I think it's because everyone that was in my friend group and the people that I came here with were all from similar situations. Like, I immediately befriended tons of internet people from small towns that moved to LA just for the fun of it. It was less of like finding people who were already savvy to the LA lifestyle and involved in whatever it is that you do in LA as a young person. So I think we all were experiencing it together with a little bit more of a wholesome side to it and shyness to it, because none of us had experienced anything like LA before. But also, I mean, I think it's just, you know, it stays true to, I guess, who I am in a way. I never really got involved in anything. I've never really done much of like a, you know, crazy thing for drinking or drugs or anything like that. And I think it's just something I'm not too interested in.
Yeah.
By no means am I like a straight edge person, but it doesn't interest me. There are a lot of other things that interest me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that side of the LA, you know, the LA lifestyle, but then there's also, you know, in the last 10 years, I mean, you're not boxing Jake Paul at the Triller House or whatever.
You don't know that.
I guess I don't know that.
You don't see what's hiding under the sweater.
I guess not.
Some guns, boys.
But I mean, there is that whole world of like, you know, influencer houses and things like that. How, I mean, did that not exist when you moved here, or did you just push it away?
Well, so low key, and this is like on the no-no of the internet, people who have been around long enough, but like my friend group created influencer houses. Mm. Like, we were a part of the first influencer house.
Okay.
And it was unintentionally that we did that. We moved a bunch of influencers from different towns and we all moved into a house in Encino.
Come on.
If you know, you know, again. And we started creating content in that house. So we were the beginning of that whole thing, again, without even knowing it. There was no intention to be this new big thing. It was more of just like, oh, that's a cool idea. Yeah, let's do it. And then we just did it. We didn't make it a big thing. We just did it. Versus now, it's always about big hype up to big thing, tell you about big thing and why big thing is so important. Must pay attention to big thing.
Okay.
So how long did you live in this house in Encino?
We lived there for a year and I got out as soon as I could.
It grew old quickly, it sounds like.
It just, and this isn't tea, everyone knows this. I just realized that I am not like a straight young boy. Like, I like a little bit of order. I don't like to be up every single night until 2 a.m. with like strangers walking in and out of my house. I don't like dirty dishes piled sky high in the sink every day. Like, I was like, you know, this is cool and all, loved this for a minute, but I did this in college for 2 years. I gotta go.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the way I operate. But I'm still friends with everyone in that who lived in that house.
Yeah.
So we.
It does look like, from the little bit we can see in your background, that you keep a pretty, you run a pretty tight ship.
Keep it tight.
Very American Psycho of me.
You keep it tight.
So pristine.
Was the grind of like feeling like you always need to create content, was that like exhausting? Did you feel that drive to like, just from the minute you wake up, you got to be doing something?
It was pure excitement at the time. I didn't find it exhausting at all for the first, you know, 4 or 5 years that I did it. I found it absolutely thrilling.
Yeah.
It was never a thought in my head like, oh, I have to make another video. It was like, oh, I'm so excited. I have so many ideas. There's so many things we can do. I think at the time as well, because everything, like with like the growth of it all, with the landscape there, you know, any idea you had was a brand new idea no one had done before. So that's something so thrilling about being the first to everything on the platform, and have it interact so well. I mean, we would make videos in like a few hours and post them and they would have a million views overnight. and, you know, like 10,000 comments and like 200,000 likes. And it took us a few hours to make. Like that is like the reason I didn't do drugs is because that was my drug. Yeah. Like that was thrilling.
Yeah.
I'm sure
that people could care that much about me.
Yeah.
And what do you see when you look at like the sort of the kids who are up and coming now or are trying to break through? Because it's such a specific career path where on one hand, it seems like the easiest thing to do, but to do it successfully also seems like the hardest thing in the world to do.
Yeah, it's funny. It, you know, during the time when I started, no one knew about it really. And then a few years later, it was polled by like the New York Times as the most sought after career of high schoolers, was being an influencer or being a YouTuber or being a TikToker, whatever it was. But it like quickly went from unknown to the most sought after thing anyone wanted to be, which again, was just such a weird space to be in because it's like, oh, we're doing the thing everyone wants to do. I thought no one knew that we were doing this. Weird. Okay. What was your question again?
Like what do you think when you see kids who are trying to break through now?
I think it's good luck. It just seems so hard.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like to try to break through when everyone's trying to do it now. I was definitely very lucky to break through at a time where not many people were trying. I like how TikTok in a way is bringing the internet back to its freeform roots because it's very memorable of what type of content we were posting at the time. Very quick, simple, whatever is happening in that moment, you just post about it. And if it does well, it does well, but you don't really care if it doesn't. A little bit more, I guess, like raw in a way, which I like. I like that it's everything's not being so overproduced, but at the same time, because it's so easy and so accessible, everyone is doing it. So yeah, it seems tough. I don't envy anyone getting into it right now.
Yeah. I have a friend who has a daughter who's 10 now, and in the last couple of years, her favorite thing has been to play YouTuber. So like he'll pass by her bedroom and she'll be going, "Hey guys," and like, you know, "Hit that button," and all that kind of thing. And it's like, she will not know a world without that.
I'm really glad I know a world without it.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that, you know, I was born in 1992. So I had my 90s childhood, my early 2000s childhood, where cell phones weren't even a thing. You know, the internet, of course, wasn't a thing. And if it was, it was dial up and took 20 years to just start up.
Yeah.
So I like that I have that perspective and I'm really grateful for it.
Sure. Do people come to you for guidance, the young ones?
Yeah, frequently, actually. I still make tons of content. So I'll get it frequently, like a DM or if I'm doing something in person, it'll be like, "Oh, I watched everything you ever did, blah, 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 now I'm doing it." And, you know, just like, it seems like, I'm trying to think of what I would compare it to, but it does seem like I'm now in my generation of internet people are looked at as the trailblazers, the like internet elders in a way. And there's
the elder statesmen.
Yeah. I appreciate the level of respect a lot of people have for us. It's really kind of them to have that. So I'm always more than happy to help anyone out or to give some advice.
Who's up and coming? Who should we be watching? Who should we be consuming?
Oh God. Who's like, I'm so bad at this of like, who's actually up and coming.
Or who do you watch? Who maybe that is even established?
Established for sure. I would say like newer to the scene. Brittany Broski is absolutely fantastic and hilarious. She's started on TikTok, I guess just like the internet in general, but now she's kind of omnipresent. She's on every platform. She's very, very funny. Just genuinely unique and hilarious in everything that she does. Very smart too. And then everyone knows her now, but I still appreciate her content a lot. I've been watching her since she had like 10,000 subscribers. Emma Chamberlain is another one.
Okay.
Emma's really fantastic. And then who do I like? I forget her name, but I love on TikTok. There's this, girl who lives on the East Coast who does foraging.
Oh.
She forages for food. She's amazing.
Yeah. Awesome.
I forget her name. Yeah, she's great. I love her. Who'd she's imagined, really blown up.
Who'd have imagined we'd come around to foraging content?
It's so great. She's just, yeah, she's always finding a new mushroom.
Great. That's what we need.
So when you came out to your mom and her first question was, are you seeing anyone? What was your answer?
At the time? Yeah, I was. So that was also really weird because I'm like, we'll go into that later. I'm like, just trying to like compartmentalize the fact that I just told you this thing that I've been wanting to tell you for years. So I'm like, thanks for the question. Really appreciate it. Maybe in like a couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah. And so was that a significant relationship?
It was, yeah. It was a very significant relationship in my life. Shockingly, you would think that like one of your first a gay relationship, especially one in the closet, wouldn't maybe necessarily be long, but that one was very long.
Yeah. Well, it's intense. There's a lot of, you know, there's years of backed up emotion that you got to point at somebody, you know, that's mm-hmm. that can bond you in a pretty intense way, you know,
intense way or in like absolute destruction
or
you're right.
Total chaos. Yeah. It goes one of two ways.
Yeah. When did you both come?
Wow. Yeah. When did come out?
Or did you not have to?
No, definitely had to. I came out to friends kind of in high school. And then family seen between junior and senior year of college.
Wow.
Yeah, I was freshman year of college and no one was surprised. Everybody was sort of just like, oh, finally. Yeah. Pretty anticlimactic. Yeah.
Do you like that response or do you not like the response of, because I'm always conflicted on when people say like, we know. I'm like,
yeah. And I do hear people when we have these conversations, people find that sometimes to be offensive or like that they're, I don't know. But it, for me, not at all. It felt like a relief. It felt like, okay, well, they know me. They've loved me as I am, you know, and they've been patient. And so, you know, that's how I experienced it. Also, like if you saw pictures of me when I was a kid and I grew up in a very small town, I was friends with, you know, everybody knew me from my like fourth grade Wizard of Oz birthday party. And when I went to school dressed as the Wicked Queen from Snow White, you know, I was that kid. So
a theater queen.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to have, I went to a Catholic all boys school and there were 50 of us in each class and it was 7th to 12th. And in 7th grade, Madonna came out, you know, like her first album, or I guess Like a Virgin was released, the second album. And there were like five or six of us who really took to it. You know what I mean? And we kind of found each other and hung out with one another. And then over time, we were for sure the gay boys of the class and, you know, and close friends. So we kind of had that. To the rest of the world, we were not out, but like to each other, we could relax a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was super helpful. But
that camaraderie is nice.
It's real good. I'm very lucky. So what is the answer to the question? Are you seeing somebody now?
Oh, I wish I could tell you. I'm just not an open book in that way.
Oh, okay. We keep it close to the vest.
Oh,
in 2021 in the COVID era.
I know. I think I let it slip on another podcast, but I'm like,
yes.
Actually, you don't know that answer. No. I kind of like that you don't know.
Okay.
But no, I mean, like, it's just one of those things where I think it's like what relationships in general, like platonic or romantic, are things that I do like to hold close to my chest because it's since my entire life is in a way publicized. That's kind of the name of the game.
Yeah.
It's like there's some things that I like to try to hold for myself.
Yeah. Respect that.
Just for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of a lot of people in your position, it is another opportunity to create content in a way that to me seems terrifying, but it sounds like that's something you want to avoid.
It seems like it would be the end of the fictional or real relationship, wouldn't it? I don't know how. Yeah. You're just up for public scrutiny. It's the same with like mothers going through pregnancy. I'm like, oh, you're just opening yourself to criticism in everything that you do if you're publicly saying what you're doing. Someone would be like, oh, that's not right. I read that somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'd feel bad for anyone.
For sure.
In that situation.
So tell us about House Fires.
House Fires, yes, my third book. It's House Fires is a collection of short narratives, poetry, and film photography over the last 5 years of my life. It depicts my struggles with mental health, my struggles with identity. And in general, I write a lot about my journey with being curious with the world versus afraid of it. So a lot of, you know, the chapters, whether it be, again, mental health or religion or identity, just in some way dives into my new take on something I was so afraid to really look at with a magnifying glass in a way, and what my relationship is with that topic now.
And when it comes to, I mean, I know you have spoken openly a lot about struggles with mental health. When it comes to that now, where are you and what's your sort of approach to treatment and healing?
I feel like I have the routine down to avoid any sort of spiraling. I think for the longest time when I went through like a really, really deep depression, like I write a lot about it because it's just so undescribable unless you've been there. It sounds like something that if you haven't been there, you can understand, but I'm like, no, you don't. Like it's crippling. I feel like I'm a heavy bag of sand on my couch. I can't get myself off of it type of feeling. And at that time it was a lot of avoiding going to therapy, eventually going to therapy, avoiding getting on medication, eventually getting on medication, avoiding talking about it, eventually talking about it. So it was a lot of this back and forth, this tug of war. And, you know, it's like people say, eventually once you address the problem and start actually actively trying to fix it, it does genuinely get better. So the medication at one point really helped me pick me up, and then I could get off of it, and then I could have my routine to keep me in my stability. Therapy was the same thing. But in present day, honestly, it's just me with my routine keeps me out of it. I go for runs every day. I go for walks every night. And that kind of like wind up and wind down for the day really keeps me stable.
Yeah. The cross-country kid has kept his habits clean throughout the years. I respect it.
I did 13 miles right before this call. So
well done. Well done. You. On these chilly LA mornings.
I know. It was brisk the other
I'm
day.
I'm telling you.
A brisk 52.
It's perfect running weather.
It's great.
Are you a music when you run person, or are you a silence when you run person?
Absolute silence. No, I don't bring my phone or anything.
Wow.
No phone.
No phone, no nothing.
Wow. Analog.
And do people, I mean, West Hollywood, there is a lot of foot traffic. I mean, for LA. So do you get stopped when you're running?
I get a lot of like honks or like quick turns and like yelling, but never like anyone actually trying to stop me. And it's, or I'll get a lot of like, I'll come back and I'll see tweets of being like, I saw you on La Brea.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh God, I forget that every car that passes me, there's that like someone could be looking at me. Sure. I can look at the car and someone's looking at me.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone's actually very sweet. It's never been like a problem or a bother.
So Los Angeles, when you see Connor Franta running the streets, give him a polite wave and keep moving.
Yeah, I love it. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
13 miles in silence sounds very challenging for me, for someone who never has silence.
It's my way of meditating. I get why people do morning meditation or evening meditation, because that's my time where, you know, the first little bit of it is a little bit painful of just like, oh, I wish I could listen to a podcast or music or something. But after you get in a rhythm, you really just get lost in your thoughts. Even if it's an absolute boring thought, sometimes I'll just be thinking about like something I have to write an essay after this. And I was like, okay, how do I want to begin the essay? And even if I'm going to forget it by the end of the run, it still keeps my brain busy and thinking and forgetting what I'm doing. Yeah. And you really get lost.
Yeah, that's important.
It's great.
Connor, thank you so much for being here. House Fires is the book, available everywhere books are sold. Do you have a favorite retailer?
Favorite retailer. We've been doing a lot of indie store promotion.
Okay.
Those are on ConnorFrantaBooks.com. But if you want accessibility, it's anywhere from Amazon to Target to the Barnes and Noble.
Excellent. Congratulations. Thank you for being here. And we'll see you on the streets.
Yes.
Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, produced and edited by Kate Moldenhauer.
Special thanks to Randy Barbato, Fenton Bailey, Stephen Sims, Edward Bochniak, and the whole team at World of Wonder. We love you!
And theme music by my Ben Wise.
Yes, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HomophiliaPod. You can give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. We love you!